this is the McLuhan Dune Line, July 69. This is the month they land on the moon. They land on the moon on McLuhan's birthday. They have McLuhan down there at Houston being interviewed on that day or those days around it. He's talking, you know, satirizing the whole thing subtly, not blatantly. But if you know his stuff, he's being pretty ironic in how he's responding to their questions. So it's July 69, Volume 2, Number 1. And this is got a lot. It's like straightforward essay. No font changes. It's all the same font all the way through. And it's called Media and the Structured Society. And just a second, I must go and close all the windows so neighbors don't hear this. Sorry, I was here talking and I didn't know I was on mute. Okay. what? I asked Bert a question, but I can't remember it now. Okay, so you guys, everybody's ready? I'm going to mute and talk for a while, then come back in. Okay, here we go.
All participants are now muted. Participants are now unmuted.
The first words are, this artistic strategy is indispensable today. We've been talking a lot about art, and that's the first words. He's going to talk about how to be an artist, so that's pretty interesting. All right, so let's mute and start.
All participants are now muted.
Dune Line, July 1969, Volume 2, Number 1. And the subtitle for the McLuhan Dune Line is A Startling, Shocking Early Warning System for Our Era of Instant Change! Exclamation mark. So the essay begins, Media and the Structured Society. This artistic strategy is indispensable today. Then has a colon, and then he's going to give the strategy. You start with the solution, and then you create the problem that will lead to that solution. Or you start with the effect, and then you look for the situation that will produce that effect. The 19th century approach was the reverse of this. It is the approach of heavy industry and consumer-oriented minds today. Start with the problem, then look for the solution. This is fine for a society enveloped by information moving at a low rate. At high speeds, on the other hand, every solution creates more problems than it can resolve. At high speeds, answers are to be found in the problems themselves. An inventory of just problems, and problems is italicized, an inventory of just problems taken from many fields, from sports and trade unions and management to politics and medicine, will reveal simultaneity of pattern of problems in all fields. Eds are works of art or artifacts contrived to relate us to the diversities of the social process. In the new world of information speed-up, the ads become more expensive than the products they present. They become more impressive than the features in the press and magazine and TV worlds. Some strange reversal of form has occurred. So that's the first page. The change from consumer to producer orientation is the change from accepting packages to participating in making processes. As ever, the young and the artist are the first to detect and respond to such shifts. It is the rejection of the consumer role that now plagues our entire commercial establishment as well as our political and military establishments. Then brackets, it is the change from hardware services of the 19th century type to the information and software services of the 20th century type. End of bracket. As explained in prior newsletters, at high speeds, Classification yields the pattern recognition or insight, and insight's in quotes. In the same way, at high speeds, all existing technologies and environments are scrapped or junked, paradoxically turning the world into a creative situation. Poets have always known that creative enterprise is born from mess and confusion. The ivory tower becomes the control tower in a society that is undergoing a high rate of change. Experience is useless in periods of rapid innovation. In the age of the computer, pre-knowledge of consequences of every type of innovation is indispensable to survival. Advertising campaigns have always tried to achieve this kind of pre-knowledge of potential markets and sales. But when anything effective is achieved under these conditions of audience testing, the plaintive query is always heard. Quote, what did we do right that time? Unquote. The big networks, too, are helpless to pretest programming because they are still working on the 19th century assumptions of producer and public. Like the military, they are always magnificently prepared to fight the previous war. That's page two. Page three. News itself is as much an artifact or fabrication as advertising. Our expressions, making the news, that's in quotes, and he made the news, that's in quotes, too, echo our awareness that news is not so much matching as making events. The popular idea that truth in quotes, is a correspondence between a report and events that have occurred will not bear examination. Most of the facts have to be omitted from any report in order that there be news at all, news in quotes. What is called the realistic novel, for example, was an early attempt to mimic the photograph and narrative. When the movie arrived, it became ridiculous to be realistic in writing. Realistic in quotes. A single film shot contained more than could be put on 10 or 20 pages. At this point, symbolism took over. Realism was junked in favor of discontinuous suggestion. The reason that the storyboard presented to a prospective client and an ad agency is more effective than the completed ad is quite simple. The storyboard leaves some room for the client to participate in the making process. The completed ad is presented to him as a consumer package. About the time when the phrase big deal became popular, the package or consumer phase of our economy was ending. Big deals in quotes, so read that again. About the time when the phrase big deal became popular, the package or consumer phase of our economy was ending. Next page. The problem of the student revolt is identical with that of mental alienation in any age group. It is identical with job alienation in every line of business endeavor. The Death of a Salesman by Arthur Miller, like The Organization Man by William White, recorded the moment when jobs became meaningless and men began to seek for roles and involvement. More than a century ago, the Gothic Revival, as sponsored by William Blake, Thomas Carlyle, John Ruskin, William Morris, Roger Fry, F-R-Y, insisted upon a return to handicrafts as a means of uniting art and industry, job and role. Under hardware conditions, what seemed a distant ideal has, under software or electric conditions, become mandatory. When you read a headline like, quote, Senate to investigate U.S. student revolts, unquote, you know that something very futile is about to begin. The Milton Eisenhower Committee to investigate violence naturally discovered that there was a great deal more violence than there should be. In brackets, perhaps the Pat Paulson formula would work as well as any. Pat Paulson was a comedian at that time. His formula is, quote, we should take violence off the streets and put it back in the home where it belongs, unquote. How many pages is this? Next page. So, it is not all that easy for a hardware society to strike its set. That's in quotes. Remember, that was the title of the previous do line, I think. It is not all that easy for a hardware society to strike its set. It's in italics. By pressing an electric button. It is easy for a backward society without any 19th century hardware or consumer services to enter the 20th century. A backward society can start with radio and telephone. The U.S. was a backward society in the 18th century and began with the latest technology, namely printing. Since the U.S. had no prior commitment to the pre-industrial crafts and culture, it was able to apply the new print technology to every phase of education and politics and production and marketing. The U.S. created a 19th century that is still the admiration and envy of all backward societies such as Russia and China. You get that? The U.S. created a 19th century that is still the admiration and envy of all backward societies such as Russia and China. There is another state betwixt and between hardware and software. I refer to the native societies that have had access to American movies and TV. When Sukarno spoke to Hollywood tycoons about this middle state betwixt hardware and software, he said, quote, "Gentlemen, I greet you as radicals and political revolutionaries. When my people see your movies, they see ordinary people with ice boxes and motor cars. And they say, quote, we are ordinary people. Why don't we have ice boxes and motor cars? Do that again. Quote, we are ordinary people. Why don't we have ice boxes and motor cars? Unquote. In a world of speeded up information, it is not uncommon for books to be read before publication. It may soon be necessary to invent a North American equivalent for the Oxford and Cambridge failed BA. That's a quote, failed BA. Hindu students at Oxford and Cambridge who failed their exams after 3 years of residence are quite proud to have a certificate labeled failed BA, since it proves that they were immersed in the rich Oxbridge culture for 3 years. Since it proves that they were immersed in the rich Oxbridge culture for 3 years. I don't know, I think I'll take a break. Unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
Statements or questions?
Nothing about China. Go ahead. Yeah, go. Good. Talk.
Yeah, the other person. Let Roxy's standing back. Go ahead, whoever the other person was.
Listen.
I was asking about the China and Russia comment. Is that relevant
yes.
now, or is that based on a 1968 point of view or whatever?
What I read. You're asking about what I read.
Yeah, I'm asking if that translates to now, if they're still following that same, you know, like, America has this idealism of the 19th century printing press.
Right. Well, the McLuhan said China was a hidden ground of the 60s. He said they would start becoming more Western than us, and that if you want your child to have a Western education, they would go to a Chinese culture. But so he's saying that China will go West, and we've seen that. So it was about his time, but doesn't apply to today. But the larger stuff he was pointing out does apply. I'm trying to find where. What did I say? How can I find that?
Right before the end, probably a little up.
Yeah.
Two paragraphs up from the end. Which is
right. This sentence, experience is useless in periods of rapid innovation. What do you think of that? Experience is useless.
Wow.
You have to know what's going on, how to read what's going on through the figure of ground, not take anybody's data about what experiences they had. So what do we have? We have hundreds of shows with people talking about their experiences. That's it's obsolete, so that's sort of half reality TV. But there are all
yes.
kinds of other shows. I haven't seen many of them, but I used to go through a mall, and I would see them on the screen. They were what were they doing? Finish my thought. Nobody cares. See?
They were being different expressions of everything.
No, I wasn't saying that. I'd never be caught saying something like that. There's too
yeah,
many
that's
expressions
what reality,
of everything.
That's what reality TV is showing, this type of existence, this type of existence, this type of existence. This
yeah,
experience.
Yeah, this type of experience.
Experience is obsolete in that way.
That's right. So they're showing people going through experiences. you know, and creating contrast for themselves and supposedly learning from it. Well, they never learned the lesson, that they never had the experience they thought they're having because they never heard it when they thought they were listening to it. We should take violence off the streets and put it back in the home where it belongs. That's Pat Paulson.
That's Pat Paulson, yeah.
I'm looking for the Chinese. Oh, okay. Since the U.S. had no prior commitment to the pre-industrial crafts and culture, it was able to apply the new print technology to every phase of education and politics and production and marketing. The U.S. created a 19th century that is still the admiration and envy of all backward societies, such as Russia and China. So they all hankered to get to America or to start having that kind of mixed media barrage in their own cultures. And they got it. Now where are they? Anybody saying anything?
I don't know. Where are they?
Yeah, where are they? Okay, well, one of the anonymous has their hand up, but I think that might have been put up a long time ago. Well, are we going to go on and do the rest?
Bob, can you go back to, there was a reference to symbolism is taken over and realism is junk?
Yes. Did you, Bert, do you go back and listen to these, re-listen to this, what we say?
No, not on the do line. No, I do not.
Okay. What is called the realistic novel, for example, was an early attempt to mimic the photograph and narrative. When the movie arrived, it became ridiculous to be realistic in writing. A single film shot contained more than can be put on 10 or 20 pages. At this point, symbolism took over. Realism was junked in favor of discontinuous suggestion. And there was some weird poetry made at that point.
Hmm.
You would have to come to an understanding, McLuhan, that you could handle that poem and explain why it's screwed up and be correct. You have to be correct. Then you would graduate. I'm in no mood to listen to people go through this. But other people have 9-to-5 jobs, so they might as well do something. So they're doing this, analyzing McLuhan's brain. Does anybody not want me to read on?
I think that there's something to the printing press era. I mean, McLuhan is American.
No, no, McLuhan's Canadian. McLuhan's Canadian.
Canadian, but that was built on the printing press too, right? Canada,
yes.
That culture?
Yes.
I feel like there might be something to be said with this, the main heading, which I don't remember what it was, but it had to do with how we process, you know, experiences and information being, you know, being essentially enabled to do so. It feels like people are still having trouble, you know, he pointed it out because it's still based on a processing information, visual, printing press sort of like lineage. You know, that is, it seems like it's inherent to the problem, you know, that he's making fun of.
Not sure what your noun was, the beginning.
Let's see. Oh, when he's talking about the printing press and North American culture being based on the printing press, you know, like the education system, the political system, all of that being based on the printing press, right? He says that.
Yes.
So I find that has a link to his making fun of all this in the first place, because it seems to be the bed, you know, the cradle of trying to process experiences and information from a visual or printing press standpoint. Like a left to right type experience.
But what was the noun? What was like that? What's processing?
Oh, every, you know, the people.
No, but they're not.
People.
The book is not forming our reality. The fact you can't get any art grants or that you can get and all the problems in the art world, that's due to the digital chip body taking away funds from central bureaucracy. So there you are. You may not have a cell phone or anything, but you're affected by it. So you were saying, Bates McLuhan did cover most things eventually. So what are we talking about here? We're talking.
I find it interesting that the fact that he's making sarcastic statements, you know, this whole thing being like the opening statement about how you can experience what has already passed you. Like, it's so happening so fast.
Right.
Like, it's just nice. It's interesting that he's bringing context to a printing press, you know, society. Like, he's essentially saying it's no longer that, but it used to be that. So that's why you're having a problem in the first place. It's just interesting to me that it's all, like, he's printing this, too, you know. It's like this whole weird, it's almost, I don't know, it just feels like incestuous, you know.
Well, he says he finds books, especially paperback books, tactile. So when you're reading Understanding Media, he's talking about the printing press experience, and it heightens the eye, and which is a neutral sense. Creates conflict over ethics. That's the effect of the printing press. Now, what was I saying before that? You have to say something you were saying because I was reacting to you.
I was saying it seems it's just incestuous that.
Oh yeah, incestuous. Yeah. I got it. McLuhan, back in the 50s, was asking, what's the role of the book? What would one write if you wanted to write a comprehensive book that affected matters in a world where books can't affect matters? So he had all these questions. And it would include, the answer would include all activities. So you would write a book. But notice this book, these do lines or repeats from previous issues, is actually very lazy. We just barely get a new notion or a new topic brought up. So he's not treating the book as an aesthetic object anymore. He's going to have to be careful. He's going to miss the plane if he keeps sitting at the end of the room talking. let's see. So you,
I think at the end, it was more not about writing a book, but about what is this communication really? Why are we communicating? What's the point of translating what
right.
we are perceiving? Like he says, there's this realistic way imitating, or the symbolic way. What's the point of doing that, of communicating? And that's what I think Ion came to
yes.
to talk about. What's the real point of putting out all your mortar?
Yeah, who's it for?
In any form, as words or as art or selfies or posts or emails.
But not payday. It's okay to do it on payday. Payday, we try to remain comprehensive, undermine what we're doing as we're doing it. So, what was your last idea, Roxy? Last sentence?
It seems he's talking about what type of book would you write in a world with everything is
yes.
being said? What can you say?
Right.
You talk about all activities.
Now, he would say you'd write it like Finnegan's Wake. So that sort of left him off the hook having to write anything. But he did write something. because it was just on a simple given, the makeup of communication in the 60s is so different from the 20s and 30s. So automatically, following your thesis, that it would change people, and you want to be old enough to be witnessing that, which is what he did. He did witness it. So the artistic strategy is indispensable today. You start with the solution, and then you create the problem that will lead to the solution. That's how you write a detective novel. Or you start with the effect, and then you look for the situation that will produce that effect. So he starts out talking about creativity, and then there's nothing anymore about it. Just goes into this 911 stuff, which, if I had my druthers, was obviously the operation of a lone nut. 911, right? It's a 911. That's a lone nut operation. Are you guys going to say anything? Come on.
Yes, because
I didn't get you chat.
No, where is the point of the explosion of creativity of everybody putting things out
and no taking responsibility?
Yes, and at the same time, who's really listening? Or
yes.
How long are things going to be really significant?
Well, it's been 50 years, 60 years, because there's a quote in The Medium is the Massage, or another book, because that came out in 67, some weird, obscure McLuhan thing. And I forget what the quote is. I don't know if I'm falling asleep. I mean, maybe it's because I started the day earlier. I don't know what my thoughts are not holding together. I need stimulation. So, what was I last saying? What the heck?
No, you said you need to be blown once in a while.
Well, blow me. But here it is. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, or 8 or 7. Already for me, because I got up on the East Coast, right?
Yeah.
Flew from the East Coast.
Now you know what it's like.
No, I don't. No.
No one's sleeping, man.
Experience is obsolete. I will not learn anything from this experience. Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, go ahead.
It makes me think of op art.
Yes, the optical spinning.
Yeah. I that came into my mind when you were reading the part about symbolism and all that stuff, and I feel like that was that. I don't remember when that movement started. Was that in the late 60s?
Symbolism? Symbolism is
no,
in
the op art.
Op art is the mid 60s. Mid-60s. Bridget Polk was the main woman.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's something to people experiencing the visual art in a way that was different than symbolic or, you know, advertising is so symbolic, but...
Yes, op art is altering the nervous retina. You know, it's going direct at the perceptual level. Symbolism would have a metaphoric one step removed layer.
Yeah, it's such a literary foundation, like advertising and symbolism and everything. It makes me think of like the artist. Of, you know, the post-printing press culture that was formed on the printing press, like, they're making different type of art than an acoustic tradition or acoustic culture.
Right. You're saying after the printing press, during the Gutenberg phase.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely has linearity and continuity, whereas McLuhan's saying a discontinuity is being retrieved under electric conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I was thinking about is how the main art form is advertisement.
Yes.
And the creation has become mass production. And this mass production is competing to get attention and be consumed. So the art form is used to just to present these products, and that's the function of human creativity. That's what has become the where the most human resources and capital is being invested in this advertisement is only for that. So,
what about advertisement being done?
Say that again.
What about advertisement dying?
Well, okay. McLuhan said that ads were like the Bayeux tapestry. If you remember that, you know, 800 years ago, the French would sew the history of the military adventures, whatever dramatic things happened, they would sew it into these big rug kind of things, and they were called tapestries. And the Bayeux tapestry was one of the most famous. He said advertising is the modern Bayeux tapestry. Advertising tells the community what the products that make up the society, the environments that make up society, what they are. No, so advertising is a great record for historians about what went on in the 20th century. Okay, I remember the other thing. I was talking about books. What's the role of books? So he's saying in the 50s, he's saying books needs a new role, and he's got different answers. But I think he considered his books as the balancing of the post-Gutenberg world, that he retrieved the book form, but his content appeared to be quite modern, 20th century, discontinuous, nonlinear, elusive. So he had solved the problem of the book just as Joyce had solved the problem of the book in the 20s. So, now, McLuhan knew the book was not something sort of like literature in the novel was over with Ulysses, 1922. Now, there still will be people going on reading and this and that, but as where the action is of some kind of molding of society that society's not aware of, that would not happen in the book medium. But McLuhan tried his best. He included the book world. He didn't have to write books. But he included that medium to show what he'd do, be part of a better understanding of the museum exhibit on advertising. So what do you think of that, you creative ones? What do you think of this advertising gets top billing?
Yes, because he talks about the orality, how there are these tribal societies that were not affected by the book.
Yes.
And then there is the second orality where
they were affected by the book
and have
succumbed to it. Your people succumbed, the cowards. They succumbed to the printing press of Columbus and these guys.
Yes, but now we are beyond
and now you're back in charge.
The
now we
orality,
want to go hang out with your culture.
We
want to take
the
ayahuasca. We want your ayahuasca. Blow my mind. Give me your ayahuasca. Your nonlinear post-experience dithy-rambic spectatorhood. What? Go ahead. What do you say, Roxy? Sorry, I got carried away there. It was just rushed, an RNA rush.
We are beyond the second orality because we are affected by the hypertext of big data.
But yeah, but what was the congeniality? What was the first eality word?
Second orality.
Oh, you've been doing a little extra reading there. Second orality. Now that is pretty insider term there, Miss Roxy. Well, you were sneaking around while Bob was away. He was digging through my library. Secondary orality. My God, who ever heard that anybody would say that?
To motivate the
oral.
Yeah, you have the first orality that is not affected by the book, but then we are beyond this. We are being affected not only by the book, but by a lot, much, much more. So what will that be? This data has things and all that.
Big data, big data. Walter Ong is the one who coined the phrase secondary orality. That was his term for the post-literate electronic babble of voices on the radio. Now, Don Thiel took issue with this. He always took issue with Mr. Ong. And Ong was really talking about secondary tactility, but he didn't have that perception. He, being a full-blown Jesuit priest, he didn't want to give that up. He didn't want to give up the logocentric, so he kept referring to the secondary orality rather than the secondary tactility. So he's pretty good books to read for historical stuff, applying McLuhan to historical subtlety. But he's not good for the present. Okay, so why are we talking about him? Secondary. You want to know about secondary orality. Well, we're dealing with secondary tactility.
Yes, that's how you would call this new beyond the book affected.
Right. I mean, Stefan Mallarmé was very confident when he said, you know, all expression strives to end up in a book. Really thought the book was the final statement. You don't see that much nowadays, unless they're stick-in-the-mud museum bureaucrats.
Yes, because, for example, before people would have to save money, go to libraries and to get one book. And now you get all these links, for example, they share a whole library of art books, like 15,000 books. Here's the link.
Yeah. You anarchist, Roxy, what an anarchist. Here's 15,000 links. Go for it.
Yes, so this should be affecting what, I don't know how you will call this, orality.
It doesn't affect anything. I tell you, the book culture does not affect anything today.
But it's not only the book anymore. It's in the hyperspace of...
What is? Are you saying visual Gutenberg space is in hyperspace?
Yeah, like the text is not a book anymore. It's digital.
Yeah, it's a floating after image of the constituent nature of visual space or the phonetic alphabet and the printing press.
So it's like the text that makes our words or orality, it's also morphing with the media and expanding also.
Right.
Like we...
Yes. Well, McLuhan said electric age would bring visual linear space back into harmony with the other senses. Well, you have that now. Tomorrow they're going to celebrate some movie. Next day they'll celebrate a TV show. Next day they'll celebrate some athletic event. Then the fourth day they'll celebrate some book. Everybody gets coverage eventually once you get to that mainstream level. And it's just rotated as one medium is not any better than any other medium. What?
The kids get their posters in the stadium.
Right, right. So,
I found a nail clipper. A nail clipper. Remember the other day you wanted.
Are you talking to us? Who's that? Is that Eliza talking?
No. It's,
I see. Was it Alyssa?
No.
Well, go ahead. whoever you are.
She found something.
Yeah, what did you find? I knew Roxy can pick up the little tonal subtleties. She does it. She gets the humor in the ear.
Like everybody's starting to participate in a non-linear way, like out of the context.
So are you saying that I'm trying to have a linear conversation by me saying something and expecting a response and not noticing this is a non-linear medium and there won't be any response right after what I say?
Yeah.
Something. I found it. I found it.
Yes, little Eureka. She saw something happened 2 weeks ago. So who was that? Is that Debbie in Boston?
It sounded like the lady from England. I forgot her name.
Oh, yeah, Sean. Sean.
Sean, yeah. It sounded like her.
Yeah, she sometimes has environmental talking. But so we were talking about the book, and what's the role of the book today? Well, it'll be on Thursday. Alyssa, the books show up on Thursday. You know, they get equal coverage like everybody else.
Yeah, They just moved music releases to Friday now with everything else.
Right, right. So what are they not pointing out besides us? They're not pointing out what assassinations are going on behind the scenes to maintain order. But you see it every night on your TV shows, the assassination. They describe it exactly in Homeland, The Good Wife, any TV, all these shows. They're documentaries for what goes on during the day. Documentaries.
Oh, yeah, documentaries are huge now.
No. I'm saying that The Good Wife, Fringe, all these top TV shows, True Blood, are documentaries of what's going on today.
Fiction is
more real than a documentary.
Although I do find it relevant that documentaries have become so popular because people...
Okay, who's saying they're popular? Where do we see that?
Oh, yeah, they've become, like, on Netflix, and everybody, like, within the last few years, it was really obscure to watch documentary, but now
yes.
It's very common, you know, it's like, oh,
now,
yeah.
How do you know that? How do you know that?
Based on the digital reflection of what's available, it's more available, readily available. And
yeah, but how do you know people are watching documentaries?
A lot of people talk about it. A lot of people pass the information online. There's like the Academy Awards have a documentary like section now.
A lot of celebration. A lot of Emmy Awards, Juno Awards, awards. This is what you do in New York City. Go to an elite award show. And nobody, it's not applying to anybody. It's the end of means celebrating itself, talking to itself. What's his name? Brad Smith. Did I see that he had an affair? Brad Pitt, not Smith. Brad Pitt in the magazine today. Is that known? Did he leave Angela because of what, her surgeries and that?
You see that at the airport?
Yes.
Really?
All kinds of magazines on the stands. All kinds of gossip magazines. Hundreds of them. All of us.
Forgive my curiosity. Let's talk about the gossip.
Yeah. Talk louder. I don't know what you said. I think you're protesting.
I said, forget McLuhan. Let's talk about gossip.
What? Culpepper? What's the last
forget
word?
McLuhan. Forget McLuhan. Let's talk about gossip.
I'm trying to get the last word. Talk about what?
Gossip.
Gossip. Oh, okay. Well, you know, gossip is a key factor in McLuhan land. Finney's Wake was about gossip. McLuhan said gossip.
I knew
was
you
like,
were going to say something like that.
Well, you know a lot now, thanks to me.
Yes,
you don't have to tell me that you know. You don't have to go, I knew. No, we knew you knew. We thank you for your interest. Shall I continue with the do line? How are we doing? Are we learning anything, Palmer?
Bob, I did hear that his description of ads was different than what I've heard before, because I remember when you were playing the clips that McLuhan said that the people were more interested in the ads because it reminded them of how precious the product. But in here he said that the ad was becoming more expensive than the product itself, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, millions of dollars go into the focus group for the preparation of the ad and then the rehearsal of it before it's released. Geez, that reminded me of the missing thing you keep talking about. It was a thought just before that. You said it. We're talking about ads, how you like ads that are both products you have. Then he's talking about – he's not saying that here. He's saying
there's a reference that the ads are more expensive than the product itself.
Yeah, because the millions of dollars that goes into making an ad to all the consultants and technical people to make them.
And then
nothing mysterious about that.
The TV.
What? The TV.
And then paid to air the ads, for example, during a football game or an important show.
Play the ads.
Yeah, play the ads. It's also can be very expensive according to the time they're aired.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like prime time.
Right, and McLuhan and Carpenter and these guys in New York when they were at Fordham in 1968, they hooked themselves up so they could talk over the phone over the show. And they probably were the first to respond, like Mystery Theater 3000, remember that show?
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, they would. So there was TV programming and commercials and that. And while these were unfolding, you could turn in on a particular radio station and listen to McLuhan and Ted Carpenter satirizing and commenting on the TV fair, the TV chip, TV body content. So that was pretty ahead of its time. It didn't
People
stop
do that
anything.
Now.
All right, could
it's
you say?
Kind of,
did I forget what that
now.
Is already?
Oh, go ahead.
What you say people do that now. What's that?
I find it interesting that when I'm with people watching the Super Bowl and everybody's watching the commercials, everybody's commenting on the commercials now. And it's not like for enjoyment. They're actually self-reflecting on society based on, you know, they're, like, aware of it. They're aware of what it's doing. They're no longer duped by it and sold by it. They're like, oh, look, that one's all emotional, and this one's all emotional, and that, you know, there's, like, these themes that people notice.
Gallery. That's a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah, the McLuhan saying ads are art forms. For Americans, it has to be in a gallery. Well, it's now become a gallery experience with people not being seduced by ads. They're just describing what they think the ad was trying to point out.
And they judge it like they could have done better.
Right. Yeah. Well, everybody could have done better, but the problem is nobody's doing anything. They're too apathetic in their chip body. Can't get any chemical body momentum going. I did see it in these teenagers at the football game, but can't put a stop on that happy day. She was walking around these kids like they were skeletons. Here I was, finally in the sea of youth. She reminds me they'll all be dead in 5 years. I tell you, she's a traveling companion, very tough, tough taskmaster of perception. You can't be lazy. You can't go on vacation. Dr. D is blogging about magnesium. Razor walking to the back of the stadium munching on hot dogs. It's a tough life here, living at the top of the ivory tower.
Yeah, so Bob, how many more high school football games do you have to go to before Coldplay is implemented then? This is what you're doing on your travels, is going to high school football games?
Well, it's like mafia. We meet in the golf course, but we do it in better places, teenage football games. I'm actually one of the referees. When the referees huddle over a botched play, that's when we negotiate the release of Coldplay.
Nah, you're going to be a good act. Under the bleachers.
What'd you say?
The bleachers. You're going under the bleachers with women.
No, Carolyn gets too distracted. We do it where no one's looking, where nobody can distract Carolyn. I mean, she just always diagnosing everybody constantly. She'll say, look at that flight attendant, constipated, very constipated, Bob. Will you shut up? I am not interested in these chemicals. I do not want to know about their health. Why can't we talk about mathematical physics and LaRouche's page 433?
Yeah, talk about hiding in plain sight. I can just imagine you guys on an airplane. You just attract
we are hilarious.
By your smile. People are watching to see what you're going to do next.
Yeah, well, when I get out of my chair and walk up to the washroom, the vacancy, I know it's the door because it's vacant on it. And I get inside, then you slide the bolt so it doesn't say vacant anymore. Anyway, what's happening is as I walk up, they all see my socks are tucked out over my pants. I got the geekiest look. Look at that guy. He's got his socks tucked over his pants. What's going on there? Well, it's very cold on these planes, and I have to keep my ankles warm and snuggly. Ever since I used to ride a bike 30 years ago, I get stuck with it. Can't handle it. I'm amazed. We're walking through the airport, and all these people, it was very cold, and all these people, they had short pants on, and their ankles were all exposed. They didn't seem to be bothered.
It's fashionable.
It may be.
Yeah, it's fall, no matter where you are.
Yeah, I wasn't used to the cold either. That was shocking.
Yep.
I am becoming such a softy. If this world goes to war, we hit the trenches, I'm fucking screwed, man. I won't be able to last more than... What, no toilet paper? I can't function here without toilet paper. Toilet paper is the best thing ever. It is. Toilet paper is wonderful stuff.
It is pretty great if you think about it a little bit, yeah.
Okay, well, let's move forward. Get some more facts into the record. McLuhan facts. I don't know, I'm tempted not to do it, but how are we doing? Everybody okay?
Yeah. I think
so. Yes.
Okay. So the next page. Oh, I got to mute everybody. A second.
All participants are now muted.
Philip Aries tells us in his Centuries of Childhood that the Jesuits in the new educational order of the 16th century were the first to have the resolution and vigor to disarm students in their classrooms. Throughout the Middle Ages, students came to class with clubs and stones and spears and swords, and they used them. Used is in italics. The natural reverse strategy for educators in this age of chiasmus, which is italicized and means flip reversals, the natural reverse strategy for educators in this age of chiasmus is to take a page from Aries, the guy who wrote the book Centuries of Childhood, who tells us that the division between child and adult, such as we employ, was new in the 18th century. In the information age, children are gray at three. Now, that's in quotes, but he doesn't tell you where he gets it from. It's from Finnegan's Wake. In the information age, children are gray at three, and the division between child and adult ceases once more. The division also disappears in school and on campus. The young might be sent away and dunked or immersed in the cultures of the earth, in brackets, highly motivated, goal-oriented freaks or hangover types from the 19th century could be left on campus, end of bracket. After two or three years of immersion in alien cultures, the young would be eager to return to the old base and to espouse specialism and goal orientation, as were the veterans of the Second World War. Every university still remembers that the veterans of the Second War were the best students that ever came onto a North American campus. They had had their immersion in world culture and were eager to get back to the old specialism of courses and grades. Complementary to this development is the fact that middle-aged executives of our business world are eager to get back onto the campus for the leisure and diversity and dialogue that it offers. At present, they put in far more school hours during their business lives than university students ever encounter. Businessmen could not only go back to the campus on full salary, but they might also bring their multitudes of highly trained professors and teachers along with them for free. This would free the present professoriate. This would free the present professoriate for travel and study abroad, just as it would free the youngsters for immersion and circulation in the new orbital herb, O-R-B-A-L, then U-R-B, orbital herb. We had a variation of that before. It would release the senior executives for continuing education under conditions of academic tranquility. The confrontation of the senior executive world with the tiny Tim world of student activists would prove a cooling experience. Next page. It is a basic principle of all structures that every new service environment creates the disservice of destroying its predecessor. As we acquire more and more power over the shaping of the human environment, we tend to replace one environment with another in rapid sequence. The environment acquires the status of a work of art. Even back in the 16th century, Machiavelli had begun to see the state as a work of art because of the relevant speed-up of a centralized bureaucracy that resulted from Gutenberg technology. As the world tends toward the condition of an artifact such as news, quote news, as we make more and more of our world consciously, the language and procedures of the arts become more and more relevant to business. We also discover that a new style or design contrived to capture human attention and to elicit human endeavors quickly supplants itself. W.B. Yeats, in his poem, A Coat, put it this way. I made my song a coat covered with embroideries out of old mythologies from heel to throat, but the fools caught it, wore it in the world's eyes as though they'd rot it. Song, let them take it, for there's more enterprise in walking naked. I guess he's saying, I don't know what he's saying. Anybody got, wait a minute. I made my song a coat covered with embroideries out of old mythologies from heel to throat, but the fools caught it, wore it in their world's eyes as though they'd rot it. Song, let them take it, for there's more enterprise in walking naked. Next page. All great discoveries in a diversity of fields tend to occur at the same time. In brackets, not only was the missing link contemporary, it was a form of symbolism or the pulling out of connections. Now, there's a pretty avant-garde statement by McLuhan. The pulling out of connections in symbolism and poetry mime the pulling out of connections between apes and man in the evolutionary theory. Not only was the missing link contemporary, it was a form of symbolism or the pulling out of connections. Claude Bernard discovered internal medicine, le milieu intérieur. The interior landscape was discovered in poetry and painting at the same time as internal medicine. Interior landscape, interior medicine. Unlike the external landscape, the interior landscape has no connections, no rational space. It is like the subconscious. T.S. Eliot very wittily linked the three kinds of landscape from painting, poetry, and medicine in the opening lines of The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. So this is the poetry we were going to inflict on you? Well, okay. Love song goes like this. Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky, like a patient etherized upon a table. There it is. I guess it's supposed to be a haiku. Let us go then, you and me, when the evening is spread out against the day, like a patient etherized upon a table. Well, I don't know. I think a male would want other lines. So McCune goes on. The principle of the interval or the interface is more prevalent in the Japanese culture than in any other I know of. This explains why the Orient, in Japan in particular, has had little trouble in moving straight into the 20th century and why they could easily bypass us in this regard. They understand the dynamics of processes. For example, one of the observations of the I Ching, the Book of Changes, some 3,000 years old, is when the thing reaches its limit, it turns around. It reverses its characteristics. By our own world today, there are many examples, including sex. By simply pushing sex further and further, it has slipped into the non-sex of tribal man. To tribal society, sex is all the thrill and novelty of a cup of coffee. The world, where are we at? The word. So to tribal society, sex has all the thrill and novelty of a cup of coffee. The word itself does not have the meaning sexy in quotes, until the 20th century, as anyone can find out by consulting the big Oxford English Dictionary. Until the 20th century, sex simply meant gender. Just how much longer it can retain that sense is dubious in the world of unisex. Just how much longer it can retain that sense is dubious in the world of camera. Don't know if that was intentional or not. I don't know if we can finish it. Where are we at?
All participants are now unmuted.
All these things he's doing is how he is showing that art is also being expanded, and many things that we were not considering art are art, like the art and the news.
Yes.
And he's seen, for example, how words, concepts that appear on the mass media, like the missing link, it's a new type of poetry, a new type of symbol, of
yes.
symbolism. And for me, the missing link will be the I cell, for example.
Yes.
How this meme appear in the awareness of the people in... all of a sudden, there are words that we hear everywhere, like words, and they can be really like very poetic, like metaphors or like haikus or things you see in a wall. I think he's presenting the whole environment, how it's becoming the new art form. In many ways that
yes.
we didn't consider before.
Yeah, he's being an art critic and expanding the notion of art to include environments as teaching machines. But oh no, Arthur Danto, who else? Well, that's all I remember right now. Arthur Danto or Randy on with the old definitions. Why should we be concerned about this, Bert?
That's quite radical what he had about the missing link was contemporary.
Yeah.
That's quite radical for 1969.
Right.
And then I think it's very important that he says the word sexy was first invented in the 20th century when we became aware that sex sells and the advertisement became the main art form.
Right.
So then the meme of sex, not only as gender, women and men, but this sexy thing was the thing that was used to attract attention and sell.
And then sexy became an industry term. Like when I worked at a design agency, it became just very common to say sexy, like about something very common, you know? It's like, oh, yeah, that's sexy. What a sexy phone you have or whatever. And the advertising world, I feel like they introduced that. It's like another perverted, like, it's like benign. It's like making all the words, like, mean less.
So making the words mean less?
Yeah, like sex sells or whatever. Like, sex doesn't even really sell anymore, you know? Like, but because the advertising world made sexy become an industry term and not even related to sex, you know? It's like, so it's just a further sort of, like, taking the experience away and, like, pushing the experience and the words, like, further apart.
Yeah, that makes you think about something, because this week Playboy announced that they're no longer going to do nudes. So that's maybe a connection there, that sex is no longer what we originally thought sex was or sexy was. But Playboy announced this week that they're no longer doing nude layouts because pornography has changed. So the whole word sex or sexy is not what we appear, what we think, or what we originally thought whenever we were introduced to the word sexy, especially if you consider the young folks now, what they think sexy is, or they may not even consider what we think. What sex is, what we originally thought sexy was or sex was, the young folks now have no probably a definition of what we think sex was.
But for me, the word sexy is the fact that the environment is becoming tactile, because sexy is the arousing of desire or the... Yeah, a car can be sexy, like she said, telephone can be sexy, everything can be sexy, not only a woman or a man. It's like the whole environment can be sexy because it's tactile, it's new synesthesia, that it was called sexy, but is what Bob calls the tactile. Interplay, I think. What would you say, Prophet? I'm trying to break him up. Sexy Prophet?
I think he's getting a blowjob right now.
Well.
Yes, I think advertisement makes any object sexy, like attracting or arousing.
Yeah,
and,
okay. Yes.
There is this type of fetishism in our culture. Yeah, we want to have, we want to own, we want to buy. It's become like main goal, like you want to have money to consume, mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead, Liz. Go ahead.
It's interesting that the word consume, you know, is sort of related to desire and sex, and I feel like there might have been some interplay of arousal and
attraction and desire without this concept of consuming. You know, like from like a capitalistic place.
Can you say that again? Can you say that point again, please?
Yeah, I think it's really fascinating what you were saying about the whole environment being sexy. That's really cool. And but then as Roxy was talking about sorry, I'm really tired, so I'm losing my trains of thought. Talking about how advertising makes us want things. You know, like
yeah.
Want this or want that. Like there's a desire that's based in that. You can see them being aware of that in the early, you know, Madison Avenue era of like the birth of advertising. They realized with the psychology that they could create desire. But I feel like we've been talking about all night this like difference between a sort of systematic psychological sort of effect of words and society and books and all that stuff versus like a more organic interplay of being alive. So I'm interested in the concept of attraction and sexuality and arousal and desire that doesn't relate to consuming something like in a capitalistic way, and yet we can't remove ourselves from that environment, so it's there. But it makes me think about just even being on the drops and everything, how my desire for consuming things around me, like, you know, I feel like I have a more controlled understanding of, like, not being affected by advertisement. You know, and so I don't know. I'm just thinking about the difference between everything being sexy and that being a thing and that being an environment and a reflection of the environment, but then also separating the meaningfulness of, like, what it means to consume versus experience. But I guess the point is that the experiences aren't really value. You can't place a value on that either.
Well, Alyssa, yes. Maybe that's what redefining wealth is about, is the value of creating. The human is or we, are we human anymore? Our bodies are involved in creating and engaging in other people's creations. We're consuming. There's value in consumption that can't be measured by our current standards of
right.
Money measured
yes.
in their currency.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oxygen, you're not charged for breathing.
So the new value, what's new as that it contains the new value is creating and consuming other people's creations?
No, too many words there, Jean.
I don't know what happened, but I was saying, for me, sexy is the expression of the environment becoming tactile. And sex has become, relating it to what she's saying, like a form of... a new form of producing capital, of increasing capital, like.
But Roxy, you're leaving out the content. So the sexual revolution goes around. No, the tactile revolution goes around the world with TV. Then all the cultures with their different biases respond differently. The tactility threatens every culture's sensory bias. So in America, a kinetic culture. The tactility that goes around it and threatens kinetic movement, kinetic culture, forces the kinetic culture to panic, and everybody starts grabbing each other and pumping away, maintaining the kinetic pressures. That's the sexual revolution. You're supposed to laugh.
No, it's true.
It was too true to laugh
sense.
At. Yes.
Yeah, became so important in the 20th century. Like, sexy was not in the vocabulary before until.
Yes. The word sex shows up about 1600 or so, 1650. It wasn't a word before then.
Like, acts make any object sexy, not only women and men, but anything becomes sexy.
Hmm. I don't know if that makes it. Okay, maybe. No, ads only communicate to those who have already bought the product. You're thinking of seduction. They make your product sexy, okay. They make the product you bought and don't understand until you read the ad. Then the ad tells you how to think about your ownership. Then that might make it appear sexy.
I suppose that's why McLuhan said the bride, the mechanical bride, is the car.
Yes, right. There was no sex going on. Absolutely nil.
Well, there are some fetishes.
there are some fetishes.
In the cars and
yes.
Cars.
The famous painting by Edward Hopper of the woman, you know, laying out in the car. I think the guy's on top of her in the 30s. You remember that?
But
one?
Advertising. Made the car sexy, and sex was valuable.
Making maybe television made
sexy.
This car sexy. Ads were the content of TV.
Right.
So the content got new intensity inside the invisible form of TV, tactile TV. So all previous modalities went through Baroque spirals of expression. Including music, which turned into loud rock and roll.
Well, Bob, what would you say, like, again, Marx, human labor was an important factor of Marx's ideas. We wouldn't use the term labor anymore, but the human input and engagement, the interplay of the human is where the value, we could call
No, you're talking about Marx's economics?
I'm thinking of, yes, applying, you guys were talking earlier about Marx and just kind of his concepts were appropriate for his time. But the idea can now be updated. Those ideas can now be updated because we can include the five body concept and technology. We can incorporate technology in a way Marx wasn't.
Well, so Coker does that. Coker does it, Gene, and he lumps those economic Marxist terms, labor power, labor value, surplus labor, surplus value, exchange value, use value, into surplus flesh. The planet is occupied by surplus flesh. Flesh is not needed that much anymore. That's how Coker takes it.
There's value in the human engagement of everything.
Yes, but love talking. We keep talking. You ever see that TV show Orange is the New Black, about a woman's prison?
Yes.
A lot of talking going on that show.
Gossip.
In the prison.
Yes.
Yeah. So a prison, a sociologist would say a prison culture has a lot of gossip. It's a sign of a active prison. Now, primitive man thought that life was a prison, or the world was a prison, or ancient man. So that's come back. Life's a prison. Gnosticism sells more books than a lot of things nowadays.
But what, also the Mitzvah was seen as the prison of the soul.
And what is seen as that? What's the first word?
Like the prison of the soul, the Mitzvah.
Yeah, what? The Mitzvah is the prison of the soul. Yeah, that's Gnosticism.
Yes, and the Ion is like retrieving the physical, like this physicality is not sinful, not bad. It's, during this time, because of the fact that Ad's object alienated or made of people objects or merchandises, the physicality was seen as something bad, like this is sexismus. If you
yes.
present some
it was messy. It wasn't as clean as the book page.
Yes, and somehow not ethical, you know, to
yes.
The body became again fallen, like when we ate
yes.
the apple.
The other senses became fallen.
Yes, and Bert was saying that Playboy is not making any nudes anymore, so that I think
joined.
That's quite interesting.
Playboy's joined Playboy's joined the Ion Revolution.
Really?
No. I don't know. I didn't bother explaining that one. That's really hard. If you get Bert going, really, this is going to be tough. Bert usually agrees with every statement. Well, what are they doing? They're not celebrating the physical body anymore. So they're celebrating the clothing. What are they going to offer?
I think it's about the mystery.
What?
Hey, I think it's about the mystery.
But by putting the clothes back on, you make the physical mm-hmm. body a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
But is that what they're doing? What actually are they going to do? I think they've made a bad decision. This panic Playboy. What, they're going to just make another New Yorker? Another Atlantic Monthly? What's it going to be? They're not going to have any nudity. You guys don't remember, eh, what they said they were going to do? They're just going to have their... Be a Tina Brown, have their pulse on the rhythms of New York society.
I just read a headline, Bob, and it just something about porn has changed, nudity of porn has changed everything, so they're going to change their mission. But I didn't go into the fine details, but basically porn has changed nudity, so they're flipping it back to not nudity.
They can't be Playboy anymore. They're not being honest. They said, our imagery is obsolete, but we're going to form a new format. We're going in a new direction. Well, basically, you're not going to be Playboy anymore.
But I think all magazines are in this crisis. But I mean, people are engaging more online information than
good point.
That magazines, and maybe they think they have to change whatever they were doing to attract new generations. But
yeah, they're probably going to join Genentech. They're going to probably go
maybe
into GMO.
They're going to become an auto magazine, Bob. They're going to do
yeah, an auto
cars.
Magazine. That's right. GMO, genetically redesigned horses or something. Genetic engineering.
Yes.
Cloning.
Anime.
You celebrate the science fiction. Let me see. What the heck does Playboy look like? What did you ever go online? Are they online? Let's see what... What happens if you look at Playboy as it is presented? Playboy, up it comes. Playboy.com. 17 super innovative houses made from shipping containers. That's getting pretty weird. First, 17 super innovative houses made from shipping containers. That's Architectural Digest.
That's on Playboy?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, the environment is becoming the new sexy, the porn is
right.
Everything.
They say League of Legends, Developer Riot appears to be testing players for narcissism. Spielberg and Hanks heat up the Cold War in Bridge of Spies. That's a movie review. This guy planted hilarious fake costume options at a Halloween store. I think they're going quadriphenic. They're just doing whatever they, any story.
Lab grown burger meat.
Right. The 14 hottest metal maidens in face melting history. You guys don't even understand the titles, I bet.
Oh, and recipes. Don't forget the recipes.
They've eight games that will get you into a zen state of mind. It doesn't get any more interesting than this, Reddit. AMA with a schizophrenic. Reddit, that's an internet place, right? Doesn't get any more interesting than this, Reddit. AMA with a schizophrenic. Science explains why you get so drunk drinking beer. Life advice from a Swedish Satanist. Life advice from a Swedish Satanist. Jeez. Yep, there's
wow.
No more Playboy.
Yeah, no. The word sexy was not in there at all.
No. Look at this one. Lion goes nuts when someone throws a soccer ball into his enclosure. That's the National Enquirer. I don't even know what that is. That's like Benjamin Franklin's almanac. And there's a picture of a cow on the cover. It says lab-grown, I think maybe someone said this, lab-grown burger meat may be safe for sale by 2020.
It's just like BuzzFeed or something.
What?
It's just like BuzzFeed or something. BuzzFeed.
Yes, yes. Anthony Jeselnik talks Twitter, presidential candidates, and his Netflix special. So it's a mixture of all the different magazines. They've gone quadriphenic. They're a little bit of this, a little bit of Architectural Digest, a little bit of AMA, a little bit of Psychology Today, a little bit about sociology, went that away. What?
National Enquirer?
National Enquirer. And just pure downright ridiculousness. Titles you can't understand.
AMA stands for Ask Me Anything.
Oh, let's redo that. Let's go down there. Read that. What was that under?
The schizophrenic one?
Yeah. Is that Sheila?
No, it's Alyssa.
It's Alyssa.
Yeah, you sound like Sheila there for a second. Anybody knows that?
Yes.
So Reddit is Ask Me Anything. It doesn't get any more interesting than this Reddit Ask Me Anything with a schizophrenic. So dialogue with a schizophrenic.
So maybe that got a little sexy.
Now, look at this one. This hilarious guide illustrates the 10 best and worst sleeping positions for couples. Sleeping. No sex for couples, just sleeping. That's the ultimate ridiculous post-Playboy headline.
Bob, I found the article explaining that it's Playboy's going non-nude.
Okay, do they say what they're going to be doing?
Playboy has been a friend to nudity, and nudity has been a friend to Playboy for decades. The short answer is times change. When Hef created Playboy, he set out to champion personal freedom and sexual liberty at a time when America was painfully conservative. See any popular movie, TV show, or song from that era. Nudity played a role in the conversation about our sexual liberties. In over 62 years, the country made great strides politically and culturally. We like to think we had something to do with that. Last year, we relaunched Playboy.com as a safe-for-work site.
They could live in their fantasy land, but they had nothing to do with it.
Last year, they launched a safe-for-work site.
Safe for
the
work.
Bunny, and they discovered something about their readers and our identity. The bunny transcends nudity. Tens of millions of readers come to our non-nude website and app every month for, yes, photos of beautiful women, but also for articles and videos of from our humor, sex and culture, style, nightlife, entertainment, and video game sections. We are and always have been entertainment for men, with award-winning journalism and fiction to boot. Playboy is a cultural arbiter of beauty, taste, opinion, humor, and style.
So they are trying to be everything.
Yeah, and it says, yes, we're taking a risk by going non-nude, but this is a company, like all great companies, that has risks in its DNA.
Wow.
So,
well, it's pretty boring. Let's drop this topic. For us at Iodine, it's now policy. There is no Playboy. It went defunct, bankrupt. It's not available anymore. We're now buying back issues. We're back in the used bookstores reading back issues, which is what I did in San Francisco. I bought a whole bunch of back issues.
Yeah, they have those bound. You can get, like, the anthology.
You could get everything? Really? You could get the...
Yeah,
everything?
they have these, like, bound books. I was
right.
In New York once, and they have these, like, you know, 61 to 69 is bound, and it's all there. And then you can, whatever, of all the old ones.
Okay, let's... Shall we try to finish the McLuhan do line? Would that get us out of the doldrums that Playboy put us into?
Sure.
I did the coat one, and we failed to explain that, didn't we? I did. So, the next page. Remember The Coat by W.B. Yeats? I made my song a coat covered with embroideries out of old mythologies from heel to throat, but the fools caught it, wore it in the world's eyes as though they'd rot it. Song, let them take it, for there's more enterprise than walking naked. All right, next page. All great discoveries in a diversity of fields tend to occur at the same time. Oh, I forgot to mute you. Guys.
All participants are now muted.
All great discoveries in a diversity of fields tend to occur at the same time. Not only was the missing link contemporary, it was a form of symbolism or the pulling out of connections. Claude Bernard discovered internal medicine, le milieu intérieur. The interior landscape was discovered in poetry and painting at the same time as internal medicine. Unlike the external landscape, the interior landscape has no connections, no rational space. It is like the subconscious. T.S. Eliot very wittily linked the three kinds of landscape from painting, poetry, and medicine in the opening lines of the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, quoting the first three lines. Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky, like a patient etherized upon a table, or like a patient etherized upon a table. The principle of the interval or the interface is more prevalent in the Japanese culture than in any other I know of. This explains why the Orient, in Japan in particular, has had little trouble moving straight into the 20th century and why they could easily bypass us in this regard. They understand the dynamics of processes. For example, one of the observations of the I Ching, the Book of Changes, some 3,000 years old, is, quote, when a thing reaches its limit, it turns around, unquote. Then McCone says, it reverses its characteristics. In our own world today, there are many examples, including sex. By simply pushing sex further and further, it is flipped into the non-sex of tribal man. To tribal society, sex is all the thrill and novelty of a cup of coffee. The word itself does not have the meaning sexy, quotes, in quotes, sexy, until the 20th century, as anyone can find out by consulting the big Oxford English Dictionary. Until the 20th century, sex simply meant gender. Just how much longer it can retain that sense is dubious in the world of unisex. So isn't that interesting, this whole thing on sex? When we were talking about it, we anticipated it. In retribalizing, our youngsters, of course, are becoming Peter Pans, and it's well to recall that Hitler was, in the words of Aldous Huxley, a, quote, delinquent Peter Pan, unquote. That's from the book The Island. I remember that came out in 1962, just before he died in 63. And that's from page 165, The Delinquent Peter Pan. Hitler's tribal dream of integral innocence and tribal purity was genocidal. When tribal image or identity is threatened, genocidal violence results. The territorial wars belong to the old hardware world of civilized man. So our TV children are Nazis under the skin. Our new electric world of software information demands all of us, all italicized. It has turned the old hardware world of specialist jobs and goals, packages and markets into a dump heap. The old classified approach, that's in italics, the old classified approach to knowledge and work is quite at a loss when confronted by, quote, the sweepings of the street or the rag and bone shop of the heart, unquote. There are lines from another Yeats poem, The Circus Animal's Desertion. It has defined, okay, the old classified approach to knowledge and work is quite at a loss when confronted by the sweeping of the street or the rag and bone shop of the heart. It has to find a place for everything, and it has to keep everything in its place. A place for everything is in quotes, and the phrase keep everything in its place is in quotes. We got one last page. During the recent primaries, New York City threatened to become the Empire State, that's in quotes, Empire State, in a literal sense, under the would-be regime of Norman Mailer. This is the same kind of reversal as Shakespeare saying at his Globe, in quotes, Globe, all the world's a stage, that's in quote. While we on the Globe itself experience the entire planet as a theater of operations and role-playing, Norman Mailer's proposal to set up New York City as an independent state made evident another part of the new universal pattern of mini-state development in every part of the globe. At the same time, one of the principal drives behind the corporate conglomerate or mini-state is the need to raid the knowledge of other industries and operations. New York City, having been created by the centralizing force of steamboat and railway, has now become a garbage dump created by the jet plane. As a junk heap, it holds infinite attraction for tourists and artists alike. Okay, one last part. Had Venice or Florence entered upon a program of urban renewal in the 19th century, there would be much less for tourists today. Is it not strange that with our engineering resources, we have not been tempted to fashion a really operable modern Venice? I'll read that again. Had Venice or Florence entered upon a program of urban renewal in the 19th century, there would be much less for tourists today. Is it not strange that with our engineering resources, we have not been tempted to fashion a really operable modern Venice? Okay, unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
But she's talking. Madeline, would you like to say something about these penetrating advertising commentary?
I just woke up. Nope. Good morning.
Okay. Good morning. All right, so I'm going to read the previous paragraph. During the recent primaries, New York City threatened to become the Empire State in a literal sense under the would-be regime of Norm Mailer. This is the same kind of reversal as Shakespeare saying at his Globe Theater, all the world's a stage. Well, we on the globe itself experience the entire planet as a theater of operations and role-playing. Norman Mailer's proposal to set up New York City as an independent state made evident another part of the new universal pattern of mini-state development in every part of the globe. At the same time, one of the principal drives behind the corporate conglomerate, or mini-state, is the need to raid the knowledge of other industries and operations. New York City, having been created by the centralizing force of steamboat and railway, has now become a garbage dump created by the jet plane. As a junk heap, it holds infinite attraction for tourists and artists alike. Had Venice or Florence entered upon a program of urban renewal in the 19th century, there would be much less for tourists today. Is it not strange that with our engineering resources, we have not been tempted to fashion a really operable modern Venice? So that's the end of Volume 1, Number 2. We're awaiting your reviews.
No Bob, review. Could you go back to TV Children or Nazis Under the Skin? What was the text before that?
Yeah, it's like people thought McClune was promoting the youth culture. Well, he's a bit nervous. In retribalizing, our youngsters, of course, are becoming Peter Pans. And it's well to recall that Hitler was, in the words of Aldous Huxley, a delinquent Peter Pan. That's page 165 of the novel The Island. I think that's Huxley's last book. Hitler's tribal dream of integral innocence and tribal purity was genocidal. When tribal image or identity is threatened, genocidal violence results. The territorial wars belong to the old hardware world of civilized man. So our TV children are Nazis under the skin. So that's pretty weird writing, eh?